All right.
皆さんこんにちは。アシシカプールと申します。マイクロソフトリサーチによります。シタール・ショーが。
And today we are going to talk about developing autonomous vehicles with AirSim. And you know, this is one of the ambitious projects where we are trying to recreate reality into simulation in order to enable AI technologies for autonomous vehicles. So of course, a lot of the discussion we are going to focus around is on quadrotors, but this framework is extensible to other kind of vehicles, and Sheetal will go over it a little bit. But let me start, and you know, let me give you a motivation of why simulation is an important paradigm for solving hard problems in artificial intelligence. So we both come from the research wing of Microsoft. So that's Microsoft Research. They are around 850 or more PhDs part of this institution. The expertise of these PhDs span from theoretical computer science all the way to machine learning, speech, computer vision, systems, graphics, any kind of area that you can think in computer science. There are 11 locations worldwide. The biggest lab is in Redmond, and that's where both Sheetal and I are based at. And over the couple of decades, there have been hundreds of product contributions stemming from Microsoft Research. And it's one of the forefront labs in AI. We specifically focus on aerial robotics. So this is our virtual team. Where we are holding, you know, one of the prototype gliders that we fly. I mean, it's a small effort, but very much concentrated on quadrotors, gliders, small UAVs. We have hardware lab support as well as, you know, a lot of support in order to deal with regulations with Federal Aviation Administration. So that's FAA in US that controls the flying activity in US airspace. We have approved test sites where we can do interesting, you know, flight tests with these AI technologies in it. So it's an interesting portfolio of projects that we are, that we are holding, and you'll get a glimpse of it a little bit. Here is the, you know, collection of vehicles that we work upon. So from all the way to tiny quadrotor drones, which are, you know, few centimeter by few centimeter, all the way to, you know, very big drones that can seriously hurt yourself if things don't go well. And we have a bunch of fixed wing form factors as well. So it's a pretty dedicated effort in autonomous aerial aircraft space, but the kind of discussions we're going to have today extends beyond aerial robotics. So let me give you the motivation behind some of the works that we've been pursuing in this space. You know, I'd like to point out that machine learning, the field of machine learning and AI, has recently been very successful in solving many hard problems. So, for instance, you might have heard of, you know, for instance, AlphaGo, right? So where a machine, a computer, trained with millions and millions of games, is able to beat the world champion. Right, similar technologies are extended to gaming-like scenarios. So Atari games here. So various different kinds of Atari games that gets that you can train a computerized agent to play by feeding it data. More recently, you are looking at simulated robots. You know, for instance, in this case, a robot that has four legs. So how does it learn to walk and jump? Again, feeding a lot of data. So there have been a lot of, you know, excitement and success from the machine learning point of view, and it promises the moon. But one of the things we need to realize is that many of these successes are for closed world systems. So they are only in software. So what I mean by this is that when AlphaGo has to make a decision, it only needs to make a decision about the next move it's going to make. It doesn't have to worry about a stone coming at it. Or, you know, or some kind of an obstacle it needs to face. It's a very closed set of actions that most of these algorithms need to take. And one of the byproducts of being in software only is the fact that you can obtain near infinite training data. So what I mean is that, for instance, in AlphaGo case, you can generate these sequence of games by playing against each other. So an expert trained now can be playing against an expert trained in the past. And in fact, they used 130 million of such self-played games in order to generate that data. And most of the AI behind, most of the machine learning algorithm behind these methods is deep neural networks, which some of you might know need a ton of data to get trained, right? So, for these systems, it makes sense. So let me see, let me play this. So this is an agent playing this game of bricks, right? It has been trained using neural network and these reinforcement learning based techniques. So when I see these kinds of games, a natural question we want to ask is, can we use such machine learning AI techniques in order to build systems that operate in the real world? The key thing being, we want to operate in the real world. So being an autonomous car or any IoT device that might, for instance, actuate heaters or sprinklers in a farm, things like those. But they operate in the real world. It's not software anymore. These guys are taking an action. They are in open world. And it leads to a host of changes, a host of challenges that needs to be addressed. The first challenge being lack of data. We don't have luxury of doing self-playing or doing reinforcement learning in real world. Right? So let me give you a few examples, and this will also give you an understanding of some of the hard AI problems that we're trying to solve in this space. So in a nutshell, the idea is to take all these successes, recent successes in machine learning, so these being in speech. So recently, the promise of neural networks in speech has been immense. Same thing in computer vision. But again, as I said, these are all in software-only world. We want to deploy them into real world. So for this purpose of the presentations, let's think about all the form factors that fly, starting from gliders to quad rotors to maybe even real airplanes, right? So that's really the challenge that we are really trying to address. So here's the first project that I like to motivate this talk by. So this is one of my close friends, Kirby Chambliss. And he's a US aerobatic national champion several times. And he currently flies in the Red Bull Air Race. So a few of you might have gone to Chiba to see Red Bull Air Races, for instance. And he's regularly pulling 10 Gs as he's flying through the course. So this is the race course. And he has to fly through these gates, pulling immense amount of Gs while maintaining absolute precision. So if you think about it, he's playing a real world video game where he doesn't have the luxury to fail. One crash here means death, pretty much, right? A human mind can do that. What would it require for an artificial intelligence to replicate something like that, right? So the challenge here is you don't have luxury of getting in near infinite amount of data. This is one shot. You have to go and do it well, right? Similarly, the second example that I really like is that we want to build an intelligence that mimics an eagle. So you must have seen an eagle that soars, right? And they would hardly flap a wing. And what they are really doing is they are looking at these bubbles of rising air, and they piggyback on it. They find rising air, they'll go to that, climb up, and they'll glide to the next area and so forth. And they can stay aloft for days at minimal, by expending minimal energy. An eagle has a peanut-sized brain, and that can do such amazing job at staying aloft. Can we replicate that in a glider? So here is a glider where we have some intelligence inbuilt, some sensing like GPS sensors, et cetera. And we want it to train to hunt for these thermals and climb through these thermals and glide to the next thermal, right? So what we do is we have, so this is one of the real world flights that we do, right? So we launch, oops, I don't know why it flipped. But anyway, yeah, it could look like that. But what it is that we'll launch a glider with a bungee to 300 feet, and the goal is really to, hunt for thermals, stay aloft as long as you can, right? It's a very interesting AI exploitation problem. The challenge, however, here is that the limited computation, all your computation is in this tiny form factor that adds a new dimensionality. to the problem itself. You know, most of the examples of successful AI that I showed you, you know, has tons of GPU processing, you know, clusters of GPU that are doing. But in this case, we don't have those luxuries. And more importantly, you need to make a real-time decision every 30 milliseconds, for instance. Right? So how do you do that? So the third project that I like to, you know, motivate is this whole problem of scanning a 3D structure. So here is a building, and I want to create a detailed 3D model of it. Now, if you think about a quad rotor, it's a flying camera, right? So if you can capture the images of this building from various viewpoints, you know, you can use existing computer vision algorithms to build a 3D model. So right now, most of these flights are done manually. So what you might do is you might fly overhead, you know, do zigzag patterns, you know, capture some kind of images, right, manually. But you want to do this autonomously. You want your quad rotor to know things about the scene and plan its trajectory such that it can you know, come up with a detailed view of the entire building while staying safe. That's the key bit, right? Look at the clutter in the environment. There are trees, there are buildings, there are wind gusts, right? And you want your quad rotor to stay safe. You want it to still capture every possible information while not bumping into things, while you know, predicting the things that can happen to you that can endanger itself, right? So how do you do that, right? And again, you don't really have a luxury of, you know, really getting a lot of training data, right? The safety is a big issue. There's an open world execution of your intelligence. So you need to start thinking about exogenous variables that you might not have modeled in your data. And this is one of my favorite examples. So this is first-person viewing of quad rotors. Some of you might be familiar with that, but what it is that this is a glass that this person is wearing, and he's sitting on a chair. And what this glass is basically it's beaming the camera, what the camera is seeing. So for instance, in this case, this is what the camera view is, and this is beamed to the person sitting on a chair. And if you think about the incredibility of this whole process, you know, a human mind is able to translate all this rich in visual information, you know, all this video stream of 640 by 480 frames at 60 frames per second coming through your human brain and translating it to a four-dimensional control signal that can do all these wonderful things like loops and, you know, turning corners. How do you do that, right? Can we train a machine learning or AI algorithm to do this? Can we make an algorithm imitate how a human does it? And can we beat human at it actually as well? That's the overarching question, right? So again, this gives you a few of the questions that we are trying to solve. And as I said, you know, there are three fundamental challenges. The first being that we don't have a lot of data. You know, if you think about reinforcement learning, I don't have luxury to crash my drones 1,000 times. I mean, it's not feasible, right? So then how do you address the high sample complexity of these machine learning methods? So what do I mean by high sample complexity? Is that most of these machine learning methods needs lots and lots of training data. So we need to innovate in algorithmic space, for instance, in order to address these challenges. The second is computational constraint, right? As I showed you the glider brain is a really tiny microcontroller that's sitting on the glider. More importantly, for any of these real-world control tasks, I need to make decisions every 30 milliseconds. I don't have a luxury of, you know, pushing a job to a GPU cluster and wait for a few hours, right? I have to make an inference every 30 milliseconds. So the computational constraint is really a big deal. And finally, they are all operating in the real world. So we need to start thinking about safety and uncertainty and mixed initiative autonomy, which means there is a human in the loop. You might be interacting with humans and other kinds of dynamic agents that might be poorly modeled, for instance. So it's as I said, that, you know, this is a multi-year project, and there are multiple challenges we need to address. But how do we do that, right? And you know, one of the big investments we have done is simulation, right? Simulation will be a vehicle where we can do experimentations at scale, right? and where we can generate lots of training data. We have the luxury of crashing our drones many million times and understanding why our algorithms are failing, right? So simulation is one paradigm that we have invested in heavily. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to let Sheetal tell you who's the lead developer on this project, tell you all the nitty-gritty details and what we can achieve with AirSim. Sheetal.
Thank you, Ashish. Hi, everyone. So thanks for coming today. The challenge is that Ashish described. We have been working on that on Microsoft Research for a while. So we built this drone. It is a DJI Mitrice drone. It is something called guidance system. So it has four sensors on the four sides, two ultrasonic sensors and two visual cameras. So now, and we conducted lots of experimentation during last summer to figure out how we can build the systems that Ashish was describing. And this is what our days in our office look like. So as you can see now, this drone is a $6,000 drone. And if this happens every day, right, I mean, we are going to run out of budget really, really fast. So the question was that how do we make these things work without running out of budget and make it much, much faster? So we started looking at all the simulators that were available to us at that time. So these are the three major simulators available for the drones. And as Ashish was mentioning, one of the key thing that we realized is to build a good simulator so we can develop autonomous vehicles. So now this simulator is called Gazebo. You might have heard about it. It integrates very well with something called ROS, ROS operating system. And as you can see, it has some good things where you can test obstacle detection, kind of the things I was showing in last video. And this is a simulator from DJI. So DJI is one of the largest drone company in the world. And this is the simulator that they give you. As you can see, there is nothing, no environment in this simulator. You don't see any trees, houses, electric poles. There is no environment in this. Now this one is called J-Mouse, and this one was our inspiration. But as you can see also again, it's a very basic simulator. So now if you want to develop intelligent vehicles that goes out in the world and they are as smart as human, you need to read the perception. So you need to figure out, so drone simulators should be able to get all the signals that we are getting, like from our eyes, from sonar. So we need a simulator that has a realistic visual world. So this is what we built. This is a simulator that we built, and this is actually already released. Now let me show you how it looks like. And this is what we call AirSim. Now this supports something called hardware in loop. What that means is that we can connect a flight controller into your computer, so it is more realistic. And it has these three vision views. This is called depth view. This is an object segmentation where each object is colored differently. And this is a first person view. And we wrote our own physics engine that works right down to rotors. And it simulates all the sensors and environments, air pressure, velocity. And as you can see, the lighting is fairly realistic. And it has actually electric poles and neighborhoods and trees and everything, just like a real world. So we can capture all these camera outputs from here. And we can use it to actually do the smart decisions. And this is something what we want to do eventually. We want to be able to have drone fly in the forest fast, completely autonomously. And this is sometime what happens.
So
So what I want to do next is first, what does this simulator will enable us? So as everybody knows, one of the best, currently the one of the state of the art way to operate on visual data or any perception data is deep learning. But one of the problem that deep learning has that Ashish mentioned is a high sample complexity. And that means you need tons and tons of data. What does this data mean? It means there is a sensor values and there is a ground truth. So to gather this data in real world, it takes a lot of effort. So simulator allows you to gather this data really, really cheaply. One of the major thing is this developing algorithms. So you can develop these algorithms right on your computer. So instead of going out in the field, you know, tethering the drone and doing all the safety measures, you can develop right on your chair. And testing a perception algorithm. Perception here mainly means the computer vision and other sensors like LiDAR. And reinforcement learning techniques, which Ashish was describing, how we use to win the Atari games. So can we use the same techniques to drive the drone without crashing into things? So we built this whole simulator on Unreal Engine. Unreal Engine 4 is one of the best rendering engine available right now, a real-time rendering engine, not the raycasting one. And let me show you how it looks like. So this is the environment that they created by a technique called large-scale photogrammetry. What does that mean is that you take camera into real world and you take photos from multiple angles. And you take this millions and millions of photos to construct a world which is really, really large. And this is what they did in New Zealand. And this whole environment is about 100 square miles. And now let's see how does this look like. So this is all available. So you can go to home and you can actually run this in your computer if you have a good graphics card. So let me show you how this looks like. So this is a video captured in AirSim. From the drone first-person view. And they have a whole bunch of models for rocks and different floras and faunas. And look at the reflection on the water. This was very hard to do just a few years ago. And they have these animated characters, and they run away if you take the drone near them. And now the drone lands. So this is all actual footage that captured from the air scene. Now, what I want to do is spend a few minutes in describing, you know, how this simulator works. So a lot of people know about simulator, but few people have any idea how the simulator really works. So heart of most of the vehicles is something called controller. In case of drones, it is a flight controller. So this is a flight controller. This is one of the more popular called PixHawk. And it has all these whole bunch of pins. But what it does is it has sensors inside it. And one of the sensors is IMU. So IMU tells you two things. It tells you how fast you are moving angularly and how fast you are moving linearly. And then you have other sensors, GPS, barometers, magnetometer, and all these things. So this guy consumes all this sensor information, and it allows you to tell you what is your desired state. So what does desired state mean? So when you use the remote control, you are essentially telling four things to do. You are telling drone that how it should lean, how it should move forward, whether it should go up or down. So there is a thrust, yaw, roll, and pitch. These four things you can tell this. So now you can tell drone, hey, you know, I want to be going like this. And your sensor says you are like horizontal. So what this flight controller will do, it will say, okay, what should I do to make drone go like this? It will say, okay, maybe I should run the front two motors faster so it goes more up and then goes forward. So flight controller is the heart of the vehicle, and it allows you to put the desired state and create the motor outputs. Now, how does simulator work? So simulator is very simple. What it does is it generates the sensor data, and it takes the motor output, and it runs a physics engine on it. Now, when we say physics engine, what does that mean? So physics engine, where all of the physics, you know, there are six most important quantities. And these quantities are position, velocity, acceleration. So this is essentially a second order derivative. This is the first order derivative. This is second order derivative. So physics essentially is limited to the second order systems. And you have essentially the six vectors that describes the state of the object. And now, once you have this information, you can generate the sensor data. So if you know that how we are moving in space, then you can simulate IMU. And so here we can use the remote control as is, and flight controller doesn't know whether it is running in simulated way or it is running in real world. So now, so physics engine takes essentially two things. One is force and torque. So now everybody, I think, would have known about force. Force is, as you read in Newton's laws, it's the second law where he defines the force. And what physics engine does, and this is essentially called dynamics, and in dynamics, you take the force as input, you take the torque as input, and you generate position, velocity, and acceleration. And you get these linear quantities as well as angular quantities. So once you get these six outputs, you know everything about there to know about an object from physics perspective. So how do we build the physics engine? So physics engine, to build the physics engine, first of all, we have to find out the force and torques on the systems. So this is a typical physics engine loop. It's a very short and sweet. It runs every interval, and usually this interval is 2 milliseconds, 3 milliseconds, because physics engine should be running fast for a good simulation. So you get the interval amount. This is a dt. Then you get all the forces and torques that are being operated on all the objects, and then you find the six numbers. Now, how does the so before we go into how we find the force and torques, let's see how does the drone fly, and here is one of the puzzle question for anybody who flies drones. Can anyone explain how the drone rotates? So this is called yaw. So from my experience, about 90% of the people have no idea why the drone rotates. They cannot tell why the drone rotates. In fact, probably 50% of the people doesn't know that drones' propellers run in different directions. So these propellers runs in anti-clockwise, and this one runs in clockwise. So this is a very, very specifically done like this. Now, what happens is when you want drone to go up, you make all the propellers rotate fast. So there is a thrust, and you go up. When you want drone to pitch, so you want to go in the front, you make one propeller down and maybe other one up, and similarly for row. But for yaw, it's a very, very different thing. All these three modes requires force, but this requires torque. And where the torque comes from? So when the rotor rotates, it generates a little bit of torque in the same direction. Now, when all the four rotor rotates in simultaneously, the torque balances out and drone doesn't rotate. But if you make these two rotors really fast, then there is a net torque and drone will start to rotate like this. So this is how the yaw works, and this is actually very, very tricky. And in the Star Trek, you have all this all the saying that, you know, may the force be with you. People always forget about the torque. Mm-hmm. You know, so the statement should be may the force and torque be with you, because without torque, nothing else in the world would work. So once you get the force, getting the linear dynamics, very easy. So acceleration is just force divided by mass, which is Newton's second law. Velocity is how much acceleration you had in given time interval, and you update the velocity. And similarly for position. So linear dynamics is everybody learned in the school, super easy. Now angular dynamics is actually very hard. Very, very few people knows how to convert angular acceleration from torque. And this is Euler's equation. It's actually very, very non-intuitive. And another thing is that in linear dynamics, when you want to describe the position, you say, hey, this is x, y, z. But in angular dynamics, when you want to describe how the drone is currently from angular point of view, you have to use something called quaternions. And this is like whole different beast. And actually, I won't go too much into detail, but the formulas are fairly simple on this. So once you have force and torques, you can figure out how the objects will move in the space. And now you have a physics engine. And once you have a physics engine, now the second part, the most important part on the previous slide was how do we figure out how do we simulate the sensors? So for simulating sensors, it's a fairly simple. So one of the most important sensor is IMU. In fact, it was actually very, very hard to fly drone a few decades ago. The reason because when you have four rotors flying, rotating, there will be always be slight difference on how fast they are rotating. And because of this slight difference, drone will immediately flip over. So IMU's job is to make drones stabilize. So how do we, IMU, when we say IMU, usually it means two things, gyroscope and accelerometer. Sometimes some people include barometer as well into this. But these are the two most important things. Now, what does gyroscope give you? It gives you the angular velocities. Not angular position, not angular acceleration, but angular velocities. And what does accelerometer give you? It gives you the linear accelerations. So now some people will ask, why this guy gives you angular velocity and this guy gives you linear acceleration? So why one is velocity, one is acceleration? The answer is that this is best we can do. But basically, you know all the two quantities from your physics engine. So you add noise, bias, and drift, and you have IMU simulation. And similarly for barometer, you know where the drone is, how high it is. So you can calculate the pressure in the air using the density. So these are, and if you want to go fancy, there are all these different levels in atmosphere. And this I didn't knew this before, but atmosphere, usually the pressure should decrease as you go high up, right? But apparently sometime it decreases, sometime it increases as you go high up. So Earth atmosphere is a very weird beast. And these are the equation for each of the layer. But once you implement this equation, you can simulate barometer. Simulating magnetometer is one of the hardest thing. So Earth is a tilted sphere. So you have North Pole and geometrical North Pole and geometrical South Pole, but magnetic North Pole is tilted. And that makes a lot of things very, very hard. So you can see these are the really, really crazy equations here. And the reason these equations comes out is because of a spherical geometry that you do apply on a sphere. So we won't go into detail, and this is all very scary math. The good news is you don't have to do any of this. So we already did all of this. We already implemented all the code, and we made the AirSim as open source. So it is available on GitHub. You can go and download it right now. It is built on Unreal Engine, as I had mentioned, and it is built on as a plugin. So what that means is that you can get an environment, and you can just copy your plugin folder in there, and you suddenly have a simulator. And it has APIs, and I'll show you what this APIs means in shortly. And one of the things that I personally like about AirSim, it is a C++ header only libraries. What does this mean? This means that it can be compiled on any operating system. So you can use this in Linux or macOS or Windows. It doesn't have any dependency except Eigen library, which is a very simple dependency. So you can drag and drop your files. So let's say somebody asks you, hey, you know, can you have some application in iPhone where you have balls dropping and bouncing on the floor? And you can just copy the physics engine from AirSim, and you can do it within a day. And it is highly extensible. So right now we have been working on drones. So why we have been working on drones for autonomous vehicle? Because it's cheap. It's only $6,000 or $1,000 versus $20,000. And you don't have to get all these permissions. You do have to still get some permissions, but not as much as automated cars. So the idea is that we can develop all these algorithms on drones, and later we can apply the same algorithms on autonomous cars or autonomous submarines or autonomous boats. But drones makes it easier to test it in real world. So this is one of our major focus. A lot of people are doing simulated reinforcement learning, as Ashish mentioned. But very few people are trying to make it work in real world. We want everything to make in real world. So this is some of the experiments. So some people ask how good AirSim is. Does it really translate to real world? So these are the experiments we did. This is a drone we built in our lab. This drone has something called Z camera, which is a stereo camera, and this is all custom built. There is a two Wi-Fi antennas. There's a GPS and a PIXOC that I've shown you in the other slide. And we flew this, so basically first what we did, we instantiated this drone in AirSim. So we created the vehicle with the same mass, same shape in AirSim. And then we flew in the simulator to do the circle. So this purple one is a simulated circle in simulator. And then we flew this same drone using exact same command with the same code outside in the real world. And this is what the drone did with the same exit command. So you can see they are very, very close. And this is a plot of one of the coordinates and versus time. So you can see the simulation versus real world is very, very close. And this is one of our major assets. Now, if you are interested in developing autonomous vehicles and developing reinforcement algorithms, AirSim has APIs, and this is very easy to use. So this is all of the Python code that you have to write to get the camera image from AirSim, and it will spit out the image. This is a first person view. Similarly, instead of scene, you can say give me the depth image or give me the object segmentation, but this is the entire Python code, so it is that easy to use AirSim using APIs. And this is another example of the code to move AirSim, to move the vehicle inside AirSim. So this is the code that you can write, and I'll show you how it looks like when you run this code and what you will see in AirSim. So this is what you will see. Now, this code basically tells a drone to go in the square really, really fast around the neighborhood. So now look at a few things. So it will bank. So it is going at about 15 meters per second. And as you can see, it's going like this instead of like going in the straight line. This is called a carrot following algorithm for following a path. But this is what happens when you execute that piece of code in the last slide. Now, ASM is extensible. So you can instantiate different type of vehicles like car, you can do Apollo Moon Lander, you can do glider, all this stuff. You can add a new sensors. So LiDAR is one of the sensors we plan to add very, very, very soon. And we also can add the physics engines. So you don't have to use the physics engine that we already had. And you can create a new modes in AirSim. So you don't have to just use for autonomous vehicle. You can use for computer vision experiments. Or just, you know, physics where the balls bounces on the floor. And you are all welcome to contribute on GitHub. So check us out. So now Ashish will walk through some of the stuff that we have been doing and we plan to do in future. So here.
All right, so now you have a good idea about what AirSim is about and all the guts of it. It's as Sheetal pointed out, it's a pretty complex system that can enable a lot of applications. So let's just look at a couple of case studies that we have been using AirSim like paradigms to develop. So for instance, the first thing that we are interested in is using quad rotors to do precision agriculture. It's one of the very popular applications these days where you have a quad rotor that would fly over a farm and it would collect visual data or spectrometer data, and you augment that with some of these low-cost sensors. So they are scattered over the field, but you combine the visual imagery together with these ground-based sensors. So these ground-based sensors, for instance, can measure soil temperature, humidity, phosphorus level, nutrients, etc. And then you combine that with imagery to get inferences like this. So for instance, in this case, the humidity level over the farm, right? Again, this is the end-to-end ecosystem to build is a very difficult engineering task, right? So consequently, it's much better to look at the stitching algorithms, for instance, right, in a simulator. So what do you have? You have a simulator where you'll fly a drone over a farm and you'll collect all this visual imagery. And since this visual imagery is very photorealistic, you can actually experiment with your stitching algorithms in order to see if you can do a good job at stitching, right? And again, the vision is that you have sensors and UAVs which are combining the sensors data together with the visual imagery in order to do inferences, right? There is a possibility of extending AirSim to incorporate such sensors as well, for instance, right? You can actually simulate a flood-like condition or different kinds of nutrients distribution over your farm, and then you simulate and see how well your learning and inference algorithms can actually match the reality of what you have instantiated in the simulation, right? As I said, it's a very complex system, so you can instantiate different pipelines in the simulator. So for instance, you can do computation on the go as the quad rotor is flying, or you can have the computation deferred where everything is pushed to Azure, right? So all of these scenarios you can simulate and then choose the one that works best, right? So that's one case study. The second thing that I'm pretty excited about is this is our recent work, and this is in the context of scanning the large 3D structures. So for instance, here is a simulator and there's the structure we are interested in scanning, for instance. So you can come up with any algorithm that would do route planning, that would do safe trajectory optimization, that would try to do stitching, right? And since it's in simulation, you have the luxury of doing all kinds of experimentation, all kinds of different structures, different lighting, different wind conditions, different quad rotor models, all of these things. And once you are happy with your algorithm, your final form factor, all you need to do is flip a bit, and that same program will run on a real drone, right? And that's exactly what we did. We actually did a lot of experimentation and simulation. And then when you are ready, so this is a real scene. I'm going to basically play a video that describes the entire end-to-end pipeline. So as I said, the whole goal is to scan a 3D structure. And this is what the state of the art is we want to go towards here, right? And the challenge is how do you do this efficiently? So in simulation, we came up with an algorithm, but this is in reality. What you do is you quickly do a overhead trajectory scan, right? And this kind of gives you, you know, some approximate 3D model. And you have some errors, right? For instance, there's an error, this is an error. But it kind of gives you an idea about where the empty spaces are, right? And once you have that model, you plan out a trajectory. So there's a trajectory that's optimized for coverage as well as the battery life. You know, all these quadrotors have like 10, 15 minutes of battery life, and you need to scan the entire structures. How do you do that, right? That's the optimization problem that you're trying to solve, and you do that in simulator first. And once you're happy, you flip a bit, and then you can actually do a real-world flight. I think in the next few seconds, I'm going to see, so there's a real flight that's happening, right? The same algorithm that was developed in simulator, now actually happening in the real world, right? So these are a few concrete examples. You can do a lot of your prototyping development in simulation first, and then once you're happy with it, you push it on to the to real world, right? So, you know, with that, we'd like to, you know, conclude. And again, you know, this project has been in collaboration with several folks, and many of them are present in this photograph. So specifically, Devdeep Tade, Neil Joshi, Andre Kulabo, Chris Lovett, Jim Piavis, Girija Ranade, Sheetal, Sudipta. And that's the core MSR team, but we also have a very strong internship program. So we have students from CMU, for instance, Sanjeevan Chaudhary and Venson, folks from Stanford, Mike Roberts, and Nitish Sood from Microsoft Research India. They come and work with us on many of these projects. So with that, we'll conclude. Thank you for your attention.